My guest in the studio today is Sian Tomlinson, who has been with Mind in Mid Hearts for about 10 years, I think.
That's right, yes.
But in the last 3 years, you've been CEO.
Yes.
So that's your responsibility. Mm. And Mind in Mid Hearts is based in St Albans, but also...
in Stevenage, Welwyn Garden City and Hertford. And we do outreach services in North Hearts and Harpenden and roundabout as well. So if people can't get to one of our centres, they should contact us and we will try and get out to them.
If you can sum up very briefly what you do. I mean, obviously Mind in Mid Hearts is linked with Mind, which is a national name. You're an affiliate. Is that the right terminology?
So National Mind gets involved in things like research, campaigning, reducing the stigma of mental health. They lobby the government. And Mind in Mid Hearts and all the local minds across England and Wales, there's about 140, they deliver services. So National Mind don't deliver any services. Local minds will be the ones that will actually see people and help them on their journey. And there's three main themes to the work that we do. One is prevention. One is social support for people with long-term conditions. And the third one is obviously around recovery, whatever that means to the individual. That could mean just coming in to do a course on managing anxiety or coping with depression, or it could be a social support group to make new contacts, maybe build their confidence up to be social again after a spate of being unwell. And they're all very much overlap, the themes in terms of recovery and management and social support and prevention. They all really meet together. And we offer counselling, so individual counselling for people. We run a variety of different interventions that people might find helpful.
What makes people come to you?
We have a hospital discharge service, so we actually visit people while they're in hospital to really bridge inpatient to outpatient care and to make sure that when they're in hospital, they understand what's available in the community so that when they come out, they're already, you know what's going to be available and what support they can get. And then obviously people come to see us who are stressed or unwell and they want some support. A lot of the GPs will say, have you contacted Mind? Do you know about Mind? So that's generally why people come to see us and why I love opportunities to come and talk on the radio like today, because I want people to know that actually you don't have to be unwell. We want people to come and see us before they become unwell. If we can prevent somebody from becoming unwell, we'd really love to get that chance. And I think the counselling works for that. People can come just for a one-off consultation about something that they're finding tricky. Maybe you're coming up to retirement or maybe you're having a baby and you're just feeling a bit anxious and nervous. Don't ignore those early signs. Come and talk to somebody and they may only need one session and that might help them to feel a little bit more confident about these life transitions, which are major stuff for people, but often can be the trigger to them feeling unwell. And that can, if they don't get the right support and help, that ends up with they need medication or they need some more specialist support.
In a way, what you're saying is almost a sort of parallel to physical health.
National Mind often talk about parity of esteem and that commissioners should be spending as much money on mental health as they are on physical health, which at the moment about 25% of the NHS budget goes on mental health and 75% goes on physical health. I don't know that they'll change that dramatically, but we want people to understand that if somebody collapses in the road and they're not well mentally, somebody doesn't say pull yourself together and get up. As if you were to fall over in the street or trip up and break your leg, nobody would say, oh, come on, pull yourself together, get up. So we want the same respect and acknowledgement for mental health as people have for physical health. And we want people to look after their mental health just like they do their physical health. They think about their diet, they think about exercise. We want people to think about their mental health in the same way. What can I do to stay well? The Mental Health Foundation did a lot of research and they published that research. It's all available online. If people Google the Mental Health Foundation, they will see the five ways to well-being. And it was proven that by practicing those five ways to well-being, just like you've got to eat your five fruit and veg a day, you've got to practice these things. And they are just simple and easy things to practice.
Give me one example. Like what?
So the five things are giving, take notice, keep learning, stay connected, and exercise. None of it has to be major. Exercise could be running up the stairs instead of taking the lift, could be walking to the next bus stop instead of getting on the bus at your nearest bus stop. Just staying active, going for a walk. It can mean staying connected, can mean make that phone call that you keep meaning to make, that old friend that you haven't stayed connected with. Stay connected to your friends and family. And giving, of course, that's easy. You can do both of those at the same time, because if you make that phone call, chances are your friend or your family member who hasn't heard from you is going to be delighted. So you've given something and you've stayed connected. And then, of course, taking notice. That can be just noticing the birds are singing, or it can be noticing how you're feeling. Sometimes it gets to 12 o'clock and I think, do you know, I haven't even stopped for a drink today. So it's stopping, thinking, oh, do I need a glass of water? Do I need to have a 5-minute break from what I'm doing at the moment? And keeping learning. I mean, if anybody's listening to this, they've solved that one today because they're learning by listening to this today. So these aren't, you know, rocket science. These are really easy things to do. And if people practice them, it's the way of staying mentally well.
The image that people have of mental health is somebody who is mentally ill, somebody who has really serious problems. And what you're saying here is that actually you're describing a situation that we're all in.
The thing is, we do try and always separate mental health and physical health, but actually they're very overlapped. And all the research now is looking at how staying physically well and physically active actually really improves people's mental health. And people's mental health, if they stay fit mentally, will actually really help them to stay physically well as well. Because, you know, we do hold a lot of stress in our bodies. So if we learn ways of managing stress, the chances are our physical health will improve too.
Let's take an example. Somebody comes to you and they know that they have reached a point where the stress is getting on top of them, whether it's stress related to work or stress in family relationships or whatever it may be. What do they get from you? They knock on the door and say, I want some help. How does it work?
They would come in and they would fill in a form, and there's like a little tick box of lots of things that we offer, and they can tick what they see on there that they think they might be interested in. We would then invite them in for a meeting, because they can fill that form in online, or we can post them a form, or they can drop into the office and fill the form in. That just gives us a starting point to talk. And then what we would be wanting to know is, what would they be hoping for from coming to see us? Perhaps they had financial difficulties. Then we might signpost them. We might be supportive in helping them go to the CAB. Could be that they're a bit anxious about going to the citizen's advice. We would just help them again bridge that gap between what we do and what other people do. Make sure they get the right advice they need for their finances, their benefits. If you're feeling vulnerable, it can be really hard to tell somebody that you've got financial difficulties. But if through that first meeting they come in and they say, well, you know, feeling very stressed, we might be able to get to the bottom of it and then signpost them to get the right support and advice that they need. Or come in and see us if they're having some relationship difficulties. It could be that they need counselling or want counselling. It could be that maybe just talking about it is enough. Having one session, coming and talking to somebody, having a consultation, can be just suddenly you think, oh, well, maybe I can find my way through this. That's what we would do.
Who would they be talking to?
We have a project officer and we have support workers, and they are qualified mental health workers, and they would be seeing one of them, either a senior support worker or our project officer. So we've got a project officer in each centre. We've got one here in St Albans, one in Welland, one in Hertford, or one of the senior support workers.
And behind the project officer, then there are counsellors that are professional?
We've got 25 counsellors working across a wide range of different modalities. So people might be unaware that different people work different ways. So we have CBT therapists, but that doesn't fit for everybody. So cognitive behavioural therapy looks at how people are thinking, and perhaps if they could change their perspective, that might change about how they're feeling about things. Then we'd have like a psychodynamic therapist who's very much interested in perhaps what happened in somebody's childhood, how they learnt to be a human being in this world, what maybe roles they saw other people playing, and maybe those were good for them at one time in their life, but they're not serving them well now. So they might want to look at those and think, how can I change the way I think about that and give myself new choices? So I see counselling being about giving people more choices about how to live their life in a really healthy way. And then we have person-centred counsellors who are very much just listeners. They are very much listening to what somebody has to say rather than giving any direction. If somebody just feels like they need to have somebody to talk to, then a person-centred approach would work for that. But then you hear people say, well, all the counsellor did was sit and listen, and that wasn't very helpful. So then we would want to give them something a little bit more directive. So the first meeting is actually also looking at that. What kind of talking is going to be helpful? And it could be that joining an art group would be more helpful, that actually just being with people who maybe might be like-minded, might also be struggling a little bit with their health and their stress levels, and actually just sitting in a room and chatting about the weather and doing a bit of art might be all you need just to relieve the stress. to be thinking about something else. But we also do things like mindfulness, and we have women's only groups, we have men's only groups. We run a whole variety of things. Art's very popular.
Why so
we
is that? Run.
I think because, you know, we often forget about how creative we can be. We're so fixated on being productive without thinking that art can just be fun. We don't have to be Picasso. And so actually just getting people in touch with their own creativity can be really meaningful when people have perhaps forgotten about being creative. You know, we live our lives being productive, doing work and earning money and making ends meet. I'm not saying those things are wrong, but sometimes when people are feeling very stressed, actually just remembering what fun it can be to be creative can really be life enhancing.
And you talked about having women's groups and men's groups. How many people might that be?
We try not to get the groups too big because sometimes people find that overwhelming. So they're normally no more than 12. If they get really popular, we might stretch it more than that. But quite often they're 6 or 8.
People sit around and talk about their own problems. Is that?
We tend to talk about whatever's going on for them at the moment. And generally the leader would give them a theme. What are people doing around exercise or nutrition or something like that? So we try and keep it quite optimistic and positive. If people need to talk about their problems, sometimes that can be better done on a one-to-one basis. Sometimes they do talk about the problems because sometimes people don't want to feel like they're the only one that has problems, and that can be quite helpful. We let people very much lead the group, but the leader would be looking at trying to maintain some healthy aspect to it so that it doesn't just become everybody making everybody else unhappy.
You've talked about 25 counsellors.
We do have some paid counsellors, but the majority of our counsellors are volunteers. Some of them are on placements, so some of them are training. We don't accept anybody in their first 2 years of training, so everybody will be at least in their third year. And then we obviously will supervise all of those counsellors. We don't charge. We say people can pay what they can afford, and some people can pay £2. So it's a very low-cost service, which does mean we've got a bit of a waiting list because obviously there's a lot of people out there who can't afford private therapy, and there's a limited amount on the NHS that you can get. So people are very happy to come to us, but they probably will have to wait a bit. Not for a consultation, like we would call a consultation being just coming to talk about one thing, but if they need counselling over a period of weeks, then they would need to wait for that. Staff-wise, we've got about 38 members of staff. Quite a lot of those are part-time. Some of them are sessional workers, and we really rely on our volunteers who support those groups that we were talking about, the arts and crafts groups. They're often led by volunteers. People come in, they help us with admin, they perhaps will answer the telephone, they will lead support groups, as well as the counselling. So obviously all our trustees are all volunteers. So we have about 100 volunteers at the moment across our 4 centres. And what can be really valuable is having volunteers with lived experience. So we do encourage people who have used our services to volunteer, because that can be really helping somebody who's perhaps doesn't feel they can recover, perhaps feels in a quite a dark place, and then to meet somebody who's been there can be really helpful.
And you're providing what is either a free service or can be a very low cost service, yeah, to the user. How are your funds?
About half of our funding comes from what's called integrated commissioning, which is Hearts County Council. So some of that money comes from health and some of it comes from the county council, which is local taxpayers. The other half of our funding is coming from a variety of places. Some grants that we've applied for. So we have a grant from the Lloyds Bank Foundation, various different grant funders. Henry Smith, probably the general public haven't heard of these people, but I mentioned the Lloyds Bank because they would remember that one. And then smaller grants and fundraising. We do quite a lot of fundraising. And we're very lucky that sometimes big businesses, like at the moment, Morgan Sindel, who's next door and is building at the moment, redeveloping the old museum, they came to see us and they said, well, you know, as we're making a lot of noise and inconveniencing you, maybe we could support you as a charity. And so they made us their charity of the year. So then they'll do various things throughout the year, which will raise money for us.
You've got a waiting list.
Yes.
So that means that you haven't got either enough room, enough people, or enough cash.
We don't have enough room. The rent here is very high. You can imagine in St. Albans City Centre. We feel we need to be in city centres so that we are as accessible as possible. We don't want people to have to get 2 buses to get to us. So funding is always an issue. We would love to have more space. If we had more space, I think we could double what we do here in St. Albans.
Could you get the professionals and the volunteers to cope with that?
Oh, yes. We were very fortunate. I think because we do a good service, people really like coming to us. They really like working for us and they really like volunteering for us. We're very fortunate. People aren't the problem. It's the money and the space. Quite a lot of people who come and see us actually give us a donation, quite a substantial donation, just because they're grateful for what they've received. It's really heartwarming. Sometimes it's the small donations that actually mean the most.
You're dealing with people of all ages. You've mentioned people who might be working with students smoking in schools. Do you deal with children?
No, 16 and over. We do have a family therapy clinic on a Saturday morning, but that's in Stevenage, and we would see families with children. We would work with children in schools. We're very happy to go in and do assemblies and talk about mental health, and again, just really encourage children to talk and not to bottle things up. The rate of self-harm in England is the highest in Europe. So our young people are struggling out there, and there just isn't enough services for them. So although we're not children orientated in terms of helping them recover from mental health issues, again, we want to work on the prevention stuff. So we'll go into schools and do talks. And we're also part of a Spot the Signs, Save a Life campaign, which is a suicide prevention service, which again is training in schools and colleges. And also in any organisation that asks us, we'll go along and do Spot the Signs training. So it's really getting people to talk about suicide, because sometimes people are frightened that if they mention the word, it might make it happen, where actually the opposite is true. The more we talk about suicide, the less likely it is to happen. People will bottle things up. And when you say to somebody, you know, are you thinking of hurting yourself, or do you think you'd be better off dead? The relief on their faces just to have somebody who's brave enough to mention it, and they can talk about it, and you're preventing it from happening then, because they bottle it up and think nobody cares. So we just want to make sure that nobody thinks that's the only way out. We want to make sure that everybody in Hertfordshire understands that there is somebody who does care and who will listen. So the Spot the Signs is all about just encouraging people to talk about suicide, spotting the signs in case we think somebody might be having suicidal thoughts, and what they should do if they do spot the signs. And that training is free. The NHS are leading on it. So that training is available across Hertfordshire. So anybody who would like to do that, there are open courses which people can just sign up for, or if they work for an organisation that would like us to come in and deliver that, we'll deliver anywhere, in businesses, in corporations, in St Albans Council, wherever they are, we'll come. And particularly, obviously, we've been very successful in delivering that with voluntary services, because those volunteers and their staff are very keen to have that training. But we really want to get out to everybody. The campaign's been going for about 4 years. We targeted GPs first, because the research shows that people who take their own life, something like 80% of those people saw their GP in the 2 weeks before they took their own life. So we targeted GPs to spot the signs.
I know from looking at your website, you've got a whole lot of services, and we've only, in a sense, only touched on some of them. So
yes.
I would certainly encourage people to go to the website and see the whole range of things.
Yes,
and then
do.
To get in contact with you if they feel that any of it's relevant to them. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Now, if you want to find out more about Mind in Mid Hearts, you can go to their website, which is mindinmidhearts.org.uk. Now, Mind in Mid Hearts is just one word. That's the website. The email address is admin@mindinmidhearts.org.uk. And if you want the telephone number, it's the St Albans office, 01727 865070, and they can redirect you to any one of their offices, because they have offices in Stevenage, Welwyn Garden City and Hertford.